SoFi, the all-in-one super app for banking, borrowing, and investing. Earn industry-leading APY, get great loan rates, and trade stocks. SoFi, get your money right. Banking products and loans offered by SoFi Bank N.A., NMLS 696891. Brokerage and active investing products offered through SoFi Securities, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. It's Elizabeth and I, by the way. It's 1 o'clock on the East Coast. It's April 25th.
Okay.
Thursday.
Thank you.
Last Thursday of the month. Not that that means anything. Uh-huh. But you were, I say to Dan, you, whomever is doing the market call, that we're in the stinger.
Yeah.
That's typically at like 12:59 into 1 o'clock. And Elizabeth said, what is this stinger thing? And that's when they play music and it's getting ready for the show.
Well, I wanted to know if it was what we're seeing on the screen is the stinger or the audio part, but it's different
it's
than
all the
what we see when we're on TV on the teleprompter. It says roll sot.
Roll sot, which means sound on tape. That's inside baseball. Amanda is not in my ear because I don't have my IFB in, so she's probably screaming right now. But that's neither here nor there because it is market call. And if it's Thursday, it used to be you. Then you went to Wednesday, but you're here on Thursday.
Yep.
And if it's Thursday, it is, in fact, Butters' bitch.
Oh, that's I haven't seen Butters in so long.
You won't see him today, but you'll see his work.
Wah-wah.
Exactly. So some days, before we get to the rundown, and I'm curious your thoughts. So we don't prepare. We don't talk about what we're going to. I mean, we obviously have a rundown of things, but we don't rehearse.
No.
As people probably can tell. Some days the market is sort of an afterthought as to some of the things that are going on. Like the market could close unchanged today. And I don't think that's going to happen, but that won't change my view on what we learned, what we gleaned today.
Yeah.
So just thoughts on that before we again look at the rundown.
Well, fascinating day. I mean, we've actually recovered quite a bit
since
the morning. But the Dow's still down 450 points. We're down over 1% in the Dow, over 1% in the NASDAQ, 0.75% in the S&P. There was a point where the Dow was down almost 700 points.
Yeah.
And that is one of the biggest days that we've had in the Dow since March of 2023. So here's, I mean, people know what happened, I think, by this point, but GDP came in weaker than expected. I think obviously
significantly
much weaker than expected, 1.6%, which also not only weaker than expected, that's weaker than trend. So the long-term trend, according to the Fed, is 1.8%. That's what they expected to settle out at. I will remind people, though, just to kind of push back on some of the drama of this. The Fed has said since the beginning of this cutting cycle that they expect there to be some below trend growth.
Yeah, lumpy, that whatever that means.
So here we are.
Here we are.
Maybe it's the first one that we see in below trend growth. It's hard to say right now if this is the beginning of a longer trend, but I think your original point is how the market reacted. So fascinatingly, what we've had up until this point for the most part is when you get weaker data, people start to expect, well, the Fed will cut. And the cuts will get pulled forward and it'll get more likely and yields will drop. Complete opposite of what happened today. You had GDP come in much weaker. We had consumption go down, which is what a lot of the bulls had been hanging their hat on. Yet yields popped. The likelihood of a cut went down. Now we're out into November. And December is actually the first one where we have a full cut priced in. So completely different reaction than usual. I think mostly because of the fact that the PCE component in this GDP print came in hotter than expected. We get our PCE data tomorrow, the monthly data.
That's it. That is exactly right. So you have at least through today's lens, the economy, which is not nearly as robust as people anticipated, and obviously the consumption portion coming down, but the inflation component trending the wrong way.
Yeah.
Like three things, none of which are good. And that's the interpretation, at least again for today, that the bond market has. But for me, this sort of galvanizes all of the things that we thought would happen, myself incorrectly for a long time, but things are starting to come to fruition. So that's how I read it as well.
Well, and I haven't used the word stagflation because I don't think anything was clearly necessarily pointing in that direction. Well, growth had remained strong. But the print that we got today, and again, one print does not a trend make, but the print that we got today is giving a little bit more ammo to those people that have been screaming about stagflation for so long, because that would be the definition of what this is. We've got hotter than expected inflation, or inflation that stays sticky above target, and growth that now is below trend. That would be the literal definition right. of stagflation.
Got to start somewhere. A journey of 1,000 miles, Elizabeth, begins okay. with a single step.
Uh-huh.
Now watch what I do here. We're going to put the rundown up and we're going to put it right behind me like...
Got to work on our timing.
That was close.
Maybe we should rehearse. Maybe
but that was close. It was in within like a nanosecond.
You know, like a dress rehearsal.
That's right. You never know. Okay. Meta plunges on her. I can't even believe I just said that. See, I read the prompter like President Biden did. Pause. Facebook plunges on earnings. Market sees red. I love that. Liz, I don't know who that is, looks at geopolitical risks and fact sets earning insight. As I mentioned earlier, if it's Thursday, it's Butters. Uh-huh. So let's take a look at Facebook chart, because this, again, is interesting. The quarter, and if you watched Fast Money last night, I actually talked about it. I thought the quarter was fine. It was obviously the guide and the amount they were going to spend. I led the show by saying 3.2 billion people on this planet are now using Facebook pretty much daily. And apparently Mark Zuckerberg started the call the same way. I'm not saying he's watching the show, but I'm saying he's watching the show. However, if you look at this chart, I mean, that is a textbook potential island reversal. Now, Facebook is trying to claw its way back today. We'll see. But a close below 450, or that prior, you see the gap, that low point on the second part of the gap, people will start talking about this in earnest. And I believe sort of the 200-day moving average is in play. That comes in around, I don't know, 385 or so. So we will see. And that's the point, again, that I made last night. Sort of the 385 level makes sense for a lot of different reasons. I'm not asking you to talk about Facebook in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
What I am asking you to do is sort of to interpret its importance, if at all, to some of the things that we've been seeing.
So what I'm wondering here is if we've had a tone shift in investors and what they want out of some of these companies, particularly the companies that are skewed towards AI. Is it suddenly that they don't want them to spend anymore? Is it you've been too spendy already?
That's a great point.
We need your spending to result in revenue, and you need to show us the actual results of why we're paying this multiple or why we've supported your spending to this point. Now, are they looking for cost cuts? And I remember, I think it was the beginning of 2023, mostly end of 2022 into 2023, we were hearing about all these tech company layoffs, all these cost controls at tech companies, and they had taken it on the chin, as we know, through 2022. But as soon as they all started to announce cost cutting measures, they got rewarded
The
stock market. And that probably was a good thing. You know, investors felt like you're being good stewards of capital. We're happy with how you're trying to preserve margins. Are we back to an environment where that's what investors want to hear?
Apparently, and it's interesting because for Facebook, I think 23, and if we can do that, this is a static chart. Let's look at a longer term chart. So 23 was sort of the year of efficiency, but that was sort of on the backdrop of a huge, and this was mostly Facebook specific, but when they basically changed their name and talked about the amount, I mean, it was $20 billion of spend. The market said, no way, we are not on board. Now, when they sort of turned the bus around and started talking about efficiencies, the year of efficiency, they pulled back that spend. That's when the stock got rewarded and people understood that, wait a second, on valuation, this is a very compelling story. And you saw the subsequent move. Mm-hmm. But here we are today. So that's sort of the real-time chart. Again, going back to that static chart, I pointed out because, you know, that little island reversal there is something technicians need to watch. And I understand that if we close, we've been sort of grinding back higher all day in Facebook. We'll see where we close. But this is one of those patterns. The same way that I was harping on March 8th and NVIDIA is the same way I'll harp on this. And quickly pull up an NVIDIA chart and people will say, well, why is NVIDIA doing so well? Well, they're the beneficiary of the spend, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's as simple as that. Elon Musk talked about it a couple of days ago with the Tesla report. And Facebook didn't say NVIDIA, I don't think, but they talked about the need for their spend. And their spend is going to be on all things NVIDIA. So it sort of makes sense today, at least, for the NVIDIA move. Although I'll say this, that NVIDIA close yesterday was disastrous.
Yeah. Well, and I was just trying to pull up the industry group. I think semiconductors as a whole, probably led by NVIDIA, are up today. They're one of the only groups mm-hmm. in the green. And I think it is a lot about that spend. But the other thing that I wonder, if we just go back to Meta for a second, When they came out with that announcement about spending on the metaverse and they changed their mind, that was a concept that I think most investors were like, the what?
What is that?
You're going
right.
to do a what? And what are we supposed to do with that? Nobody understood it or could wrap their arms around it, which is why the stock got punished, because they didn't understand the vision. And it's not as if they became to understand the vision, but AI is something that most investors, I think, at least understand as of now, of its existence now. So to say we're going to spend on this, and it's something that everybody had been so enthusiastic about, it also tells me that maybe some of the enthusiasm for AI is waning, and as it maybe should, given the run-up that we had. We've talked about this so many times. Every new theme has to go through a boom and bust cycle, and it doesn't have to be terribly dramatic, but there are going to be times where you get ahead of yourself, you realize that it's too much too fast, we're not really sure how we're going to make money off of it yet, and I wonder if maybe this is the beginning of that being displayed in a stock price.
You know what? I think that's an excellent point, because one of the things I said on Fast Money for weeks was, if Facebook doesn't understand what the metaverse is, how are traders and investors going to, because I certainly didn't understand it, and how's the market going to understand? AI is something I think people can wrap their head around, yet they're being punished in a like manner. We'll see again how this all plays out, but your point about, you know, is the interest waning or some of the enthusiasm waning, I think you're onto something. And we're going to learn more about with this next company. So let's take a look at Microsoft, because they obviously report tonight after the bell. So implied move of about 5% either way. You can see what the stock has been doing. You know, again, I'm not asking you to play stock specific stuff. I'm going to ask you a very specific question, but here's my take. It's a very important company. For years, I've said this is one of the five, if not three, most important companies in the world. I'll stand by that. They've been rewarded in kind. They've had some good quarters. They've had some not so good quarters, but they've caught this wave as well. They find themselves, even with this sell-off, trading just north, I think, of 31 times next year's numbers, which is a big valuation for a company that historically doesn't trade there. So how important, again, I'm not asking you to gauge what Microsoft is going to do. You can see plus or minus 5%, I think, makes sense. Plus or minus 5% is about a 20-ish dollar move, $19, $18, $19. How important, we talked about Facebook, I think Microsoft is more important to what's going on in the broader market. Thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's more important right now because, number one, first of all, it falls in the software category. Okay, just to be clear on that. Microsoft is a company, much like a lot of the old school tech companies, that has multiple revenue streams. Now, we talked about this actually on Halftime Report, I think, last week.
HTR.
The HTR. Where, you know, it's not as if anybody's out there banging the table that Microsoft is making hay on Windows anymore, right? But the reality is they do have a number of different revenue streams, some of which are very sticky, and they have that to sort of lean back on if parts of the business don't go well. So they're not one of those companies that's relying on one particular part to drive it forward entirely. However, I do think Microsoft, because of how large it is, because of how influential it is in the space, and because it is one of those older and more established tech companies, is going to mean a lot for sentiment. And it's one of those, similarly to what I would say about Ford or CAT or something, a company that's been around for a long time, if they can't figure out how to make money or get their operating margins in line, then who in that industry can? Mm-hmm. So some of these companies that are really good at that historically, they need to stay good at that. And I think this is a challenging environment, but this is also just a challenging environment to be a growth stock as yields rise. So you have to handicap it with that too. And a lot of these pullbacks, a lot of this is on macro news. This is not as much on fundamentals as I think we'd like to explain it away with. There's a lot of macro stuff going on here, and yields are pressuring growth.
100%, which is why, you know, I led this show with exactly that. As much as you want to talk about the market, the macro stuff to me, regardless of market moves today, that's the most important thing. So today's going to be one of those days. And tomorrow, God only knows what this PCE number is going to be, but I think you have a sort of a window in what it potentially could be. We'll see how the market reacts. By the way, throw up a Caterpillar chart because that obviously a bit of a disappointment as well. And again, it's not Caterpillar to me is a huge indicator in terms of the direction of things. And when you see and hear some of the commentary, I mean, these are long cycle things. I mean, you can talk about this. I mean, this is very important. So the move higher made sense. The move higher on the back of interest rates going lower made a lot of sense. To your point, now that interest rates, it's no coincidence that this stock was lower left to upper right for that period of time when rates were basically cascading lower. it's further no coincidence that as rates have started to move up in a dramatic way, this stock is selling off. Very interest rate, economically sensitive names. And you see what's happening to your earlier point.
Yeah. So I talked about this the other day. There was this short-lived, really good rally. It started maybe at the end of last Friday. It lasted Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday-ish of this week. And now it's done, right? But during that little 48-hour window when it was rallying, it was like this little game of put the money back where it came from. Mm-hmm. So small caps suddenly caught a really strong bid. You saw some of the cyclicals come back. You saw semis catch a really nice bid. And I think some of that, the semi trade especially, is something that is a little different than what else is going on in the market. I think part of it is what you said before. It's where the spend is going. But I also think it's people going back to what they know. It's back to what's won in the past. And we've been led to believe that a lot of those mega cap tech companies, the AI companies, the semiconductor companies are going to do well in up environments, down environments, sideways environments, whatever environment it may be. During the time when everything was going up, stocks like Caterpillar, stocks that are in that industrial sector, were catching so much of a bid because there was all of this excitement around, we are cyclical again, we mm-hmm. are expanding, small caps were doing really well, and that's where the money was going, which frankly made sense if that were true, right? Now we're in a place where that's been sort of blown out of the water with this GDP print and questioning whether or not that is in fact the reason. I remember you and I talking about, and I don't know when this was, it might have been a month ago, may have been a little bit more than that, where we don't know yet if this run up in industrials and some of these other cyclically sensitive names is really because of strong fundamentals, or is it just because of momentum and a rotation out of high valued names into lower valued names? I think we're finding out now that it wasn't quite as sturdy as we expected.
100%, you're spot on. So now at least you can say, okay, maybe that run-up was on the fact of momentum and people looking for valuations they could wrap their head around, and they weren't taking into consideration maybe the economy is not as robust. I guess there was a hope that, you know, the economy would back up that thesis. At least today we're not seeing it. Mm-hmm. What did you just say before? Put the money back?
Put the money back where it came from.
Yeah. If I said to you, and I'm curious as you know if you know the answer, because I really don't know if you're going to know or not.
Okay.
If I said to you, put the candle back. You have any idea?
No.
None whatsoever.
None.
It's unfortunate.
What?
I'm sure there.
Where's it from?
I'm sure there are people. No, it's not. No, not the Godfather. I'm sure there are people in the chat room right now. And
help me out,
Amanda,
guys.
Amanda can text me. Put the candle back is one of the great lines of Young Frankenstein, a movie that if you've never seen, you should rent. Go to Blockbuster after this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a nice Thursday night.
I keep looking for it on the map. It doesn't come up.
Put the candle back. Google, real quick. I don't want to get bogged down here. You know, Google valuation, compelling. Absolutely. Seemingly, they're getting their act together. Here's our static chart of Google showing you basically up or down 5.5% or so. That's the implied move. There's the Google chart, static Google chart. If you put up a little longer term Google chart, and Carter and I talked about this yesterday, I mean, you'll see we're right up against some prior highs. So this to me is as important as it was for Facebook, given the run that it had had. Here you go. I mean, people say, wait a second, guy, it's through that prior. It is. But as Carter pointed out, you know, a company of this size, let's not split hairs here. I mean, we're basically up against prior all-time highs if you go all back to the fall of 21. So I would submit, as important as Facebook was and as important as Microsoft is going to be, I think you could say the same thing about Google. Maybe Microsoft and Google will cancel each other out. I have no idea. But I just wanted to throw it up there just to show you why, you know, when you have runs like this, these are the quarters that you have to do everything right. You have to execute. Because I'll say this, if Facebook had been, you can't do the counterfactual, but quickly, you know, if it had been at a completely different price point and if they reported that quarter, which was very good, mm-hmm. those comments about spend might have been discounted given where the stock was. So when I say price is truth, people get mad at me. It's because the only thing you have to base your decision off of after taking in all the inputs, all the facts, is where the stock is trading at. Mm-hmm. Because the decision to buy or sell something is predicated on where it's been and where it is now and where you think it's going. Anyway, that's my
that's
sort of
That's why they say don't fight the tape, right?
Look at you. Hmm. Look at you synthesize all my... Oh, go ahead.
So, okay, so we've got Alphabet today. We've got Snap reports today too. Regardless, earnings season, obviously, this is one of the first hot weeks. Next week will be a really big week as well. and I know you can't answer this the same way for every stock. Are you somebody who buys into earnings? Do you want to wait until after earnings? Do you make a transaction ahead of earnings?
That's a great question.
Or do you wait until after?
So, I'm glad you mentioned that because Netflix is a great example. Throw up a Netflix chart real quick, if we can, real time, longer term Netflix chart. And again, what I've been saying in terms of Netflix on fast money is you have momentum. This is prior to earnings. There's momentum clearly to the upside in the stock. They report whenever they reported last week. It was Wednesday, whatever day it was last week. My idea was you own this stock in the earnings. However, you probably pull the ripcord before they report. Now, I thought we trade to the prior high. That was not right. And what I was saying all along was at a certain point, Netflix got itself really cheap on valuation. But given this move, it got itself really expensive. And what I said was, unless they crush, valuation is going to get in the way. And that's sort of what happened. So I don't think you, and I'm not suggesting you're saying this, but it's not a one size fits all thing. I think it completely depends on obviously the stock you're trading, but the run that it's had or not had and the levels that it's trading at, because Tesla's a great example. I mean, I didn't think the Tesla quarter was particularly good, but it traded down and held a level that we had pointed out the other day. And the bounce made sense given the levels and given the fact that, you know, they sort of gotten people jazzed up about robo-taxis and those types of things. So you have all different, again, it's not one size fits all, but I'm glad you asked. By the way, you're on the Twitter.
I am. It's called X now.
At Liz Young Strat on Twitter. And you put, your Twitter game is outstanding. I don't know if you and Mario do this shit together.
Mario has a lot to do with it. Yes,
I like the way you say Mario. But let's pull up your, does this hold today? Days since and now, I tell you, we looked dicey there for a while, but days since an S&P 500 decline of 2%. Now, look, at one point today, it looked like we might have broke trend or broke this streak. Now, not so, but, you know, there's a lot of day left. So thoughts on this, and again, why you've been talking about it and continue to illustrate it.
Well, I mean, we're coming up on the longest time since 2018 where we've had no days of a 2% decline. That's a really long time. And I think there's a couple things that this means. First of all, it shows you on the positive side that there are still a lot of buyers out there. There are still a lot of dip buyers, and there is a lot of desire for optimism in this market, which has made it stable and frankly has driven a lot of the rotation and the broadening out that we keep hearing about, the fact that people are willing to continue to put money to work in the stock market. We didn't even really get close today yet. Who knows what happens for the rest of the day, but we got to about 1.5% down on the S&P, and that was as bad as it got. So we didn't even really sniff it today. At some point, this triangle will end and we'll have our 2% down day, but it's fascinating to me how much it might take to get us there. And I don't know if it ends up being a compounding of risks on top of each other that finally the market says, okay, enough, I give in. Or if it takes something really, really big out of left field that takes it down for a day or two in a row. But the other thing is I looked at for the Dow, and I know the Dow is kind of a crappy indicator, but the amount of times that we've had a 500-point day in the Dow on the downside, there were three times last March. We haven't had anything since then. We've had a couple 500 up days, but there have been no 500-plus down days since March of 2023, which is also pretty incredible. So there is a lot of resilience in this market. There is a lot of stability in buyers, and you can even see it. You could watch it today. I felt like I was watching a slot machine. I'm watching just the points on the board. As the Dow approached 700, it recovered right away. It's like there were algorithms at 700 that people went in and bought, brought it right back down to 650. So it's really a fascinating thing to watch.
It's without question, it's a liquidity-driven thing as well. We've talked about passive investing thousands of times. That's part of it. But to your point, it's not going to be anything that we can necessarily put our finger on, but it's out there in the ether somewhere. So stay tuned. Quickly, the S&P 500 chart with the 50, 100, and 200-day moving averages. And this is really interesting. And, you know, we've talked about this, but the 50-day moving average is absolutely flattening out, starting to maybe trend lower. We broke it, traded down to the 100-day, bounced off it, traded back up to the 50-day, seemingly got rejected. And we're going to vacillate in between here for a while, which is why I think things, this is why I think things are so noisy here. Let's look at the Russell because it's a little bit different. That hasn't, the S&P hasn't talked about the 200-day. The Russell, entirely different. Here's one where We violated the 50-day a while ago. We traded through the 100-day, held the 200-day moving average. Now we're bouncing, but now we're in the middle of this. So again, if the 50-day starts to cross through the 100, Katie, bar the door. I don't know who she is, but she better bar the door because things will get interesting. And again, interest rates going higher are not going to be supportive, I don't think, of small cap stocks, Elizabeth.
No, they are not. I can categorically say I do not think that interest rates going higher are going to support them, which is why you've seen such a sell-off here. And also reminding people, I know you've heard us say this before, even after that really strong small cap rally where it got above some of its levels, its prior levels of resistance, it still only got to about 13 to 14% below its previous high. So when everybody's alarm bells are ringing that we were hitting new all-time highs and all these other things, small caps weren't even close. And why does that matter? I understand what the pushback will be. It'll be that, you know, most of these companies aren't profitable. They don't represent a lot of GDP. That's absolutely true. I recognize that. They will always be more volatile and they always probably will trade at a discount to large cap stocks for those reasons. However, small caps employ more than half of the U.S.
Yes.
labor market. That's important. And when you've got small caps that can be a part of an M&A cycle and make large caps larger, or small caps that can grow into mid caps and create more jobs, create more growth, the fact that they can't get above a certain level is an indication that we're not so sure cyclicality is alive and well.
I think that you, again, you synthesize that extraordinarily well. And, you know, we started this talking about the importance of rates. Let's just throw up a 10-year chart. Through 470 now, the highest level we've probably seen in, I don't know, six months or so. You're obviously a lot closer to 5% now than you are to 4%. That's pretty obvious. But I'm, again, and I think you probably fall in this similar camp. Rates are going up in the majority. They're going up for a myriad of reasons. Most of the reasons, in my opinion, are not good ones. There are some good reasons. Most of them are not. One of the reasons, because inflation is a problem, as we're sort of learning more and more, issuance is a big deal. The market's going to demand, especially when they see that GDP print, they're going to demand a higher yield to buy our bonds, to buy our debt, without question, coming to a theater near you. So stick around, folks, because I think rates will continue to go higher, and I think you probably share that view.
I do. And I saw it kind of flash across the tape. I didn't see what the headline was, though. There was a 7-year auction while we were on the market call. I'm not sure how it went, judging by the fact that yields are still sort of in check. I'm going to guess that it went okay. But that's something that we should watch going forward. Watch all of the auctions, because now there is risk. Obviously, we saw yields pop today on a weak GDP print, but a strong PCE print. There is upside risk in the 10-year. There's upside risk probably across the curve as inflation stays hot, but also for other reasons. The first of which is if we have weak auctions that continue, that will push yields up. If Japan intervenes in its currency, that could push yields up. And there was chatter today. There was a headline that came across about the Bank of Japan considering basically pulling back on QE. So I think something along the lines of pulling back on purchases. So they are going to try to intervene in little ways, in the most benign ways first. And if that's not effective, you have to expect that they're going to start to do it in bigger ways, one of which options is to dump treasuries. So there's upside pressure in yields here, at least in the near term. And it's something to be wary of as investors, for sure.
100%. And we don't have to get bogged down in this, but Danny Moses has talked about this. You know where I stand in gold. I think you share a similar view. Then last night we heard the BHP potentially looking at Anglo American, which would be a huge deal in the space, almost a $40 billion deal. I think subsequent Anglo said it's not enough. And they're probably right, by the way. But again, I'm not looking to trade these stocks, but my point is, you talked about M&A. When you start to see M&A in this space, it's a great indication of what they think is. Now, not to say that these mining company CEOs have done a great job, they have not, but there's clearly some certainty in the space that, again, I don't think the market is taking into consideration. I still think mining stocks are going higher, which leads us to geopolitical risk, because that plays into gold. And that's something that you've brought forth today. I love when you bring things.
Yes. Yes. I wrote a note and it dropped this morning. So this is not a preview. This is an afterview, but it's about geopolitical risk, given everything that's happened over the last couple of weeks, just to break it down, because it seems like the market was really upset about it for a weekend and then got over it very quickly. So Mario and I sat back and said, Why is that? What does it take? This first chart just shows you a broad geopolitical risk indicator. And the only interesting thing here is that as scary as it felt for a couple days, mm-hmm. we didn't even get near some of the peaks of previous times of geopolitical risk. So it takes more than that. I would say it probably takes something that's longer lasting than that as well. And then if you look at the next chart, basically what we did here was try to compare the price shocks that occurred. So after Russia invaded Ukraine with the ones that are happening now or that happened now. This is just showing us Russia-Ukraine, okay? And this ends at the end of 2022, so this is not through today. But you can see the volatility that persisted for the better part of 2022. Now, the invasion was in February of 2022. You've got natural gas all over the place for the rest of that year, and then quite a few different spikes in some other commodities, wheat in particular, and then gold is kind of the boring one of this chart. Here's the takeaway, and here's the point. What we found was geopolitical shocks, as much as they are juicy headlines, we tend to overreact to them in the moment, and the market gets over them pretty quickly, mm-hmm. unless, which is exactly what happened in this one, unless there's very clear, lasting consequences to that shock. So that first line there, the invasion, is accompanied very shortly thereafter with a series of sanctions. Those are clear, lasting consequences of trade, clear, lasting consequences for supply and demand for some very large regions around the world. And then at some of the other other points that we have on here, turning off gas to Europe. So these are the consequences that continued throughout the year. What we're dealing with now, if you want to pull up the next chart, what we're dealing with now in the Middle East, yes, there was a shock. Yes, there was some nervousness around it. This chart is only a few months long, but look at oil right back to where it was mm-hmm. before Israel was even attacked. So the market gets over it very quickly unless there are clear, lasting effects. We just haven't had that yet. That doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. That doesn't mean this is over, but it just shows you that the market moves on quickly, except for gold. Look at that gold line. So gold had already been strong and strengthening before this happened. Even as these tensions de-escalated or seemingly went away for the moment, gold continued to climb. Now, some people have said gold is warning us against war. Okay, I would agree with that on some level, but if that were the only thing gold was warning us against, it would have given all of this back mm-hmm. and been back down to where it was before. I continue to believe gold is warning us against currency issues.
100%.
More than war. Obviously, war not a good thing either, but I think this is about currency. This is about central banks protecting their own currency and their own reserves against strength in the dollar, against volatility around the globe because of interest rates and inflation and because of central bank policies that are moving in completely different directions.
I'm complete accord with you. It's gold's rallying for much different reasons. Obviously, war, God forbid, but that's just sort of an additional reason, but it's not the reason by any stretch of the imagination. You've come to know me pretty well over the years. You realize I'm not the brightest bulb in the fixture. But there's a global GDP chart that we've brought, deviation from pre-crisis trend. Now, I look at this and I'm like, you got to walk me through because, again, I have difficulties. Yeah.
So here's what we did. This is the last part. And this, by the way, this week's has a dual byline. Mario and I wrote this together. He wrote this last piece basically about what are the risks, the other big risks that are on the horizon. We covered some of the ones that we already know about and that have occurred, aren't over yet, but have occurred. The big one that we wanted to outline, we continue to talk about the risk between China and Taiwan, and just looking at how big of a part of the economy they are, right? China is the second largest economy in the world, but some of the stats that are also fascinating, you've got China is the second largest economy, but the top exporter of a lot of goods. Taiwan, although very small from a GDP perspective, is still more than 60% of global semiconductors and 90% of the advanced chip market. So it doesn't matter necessarily how big or small a country is. It's how much of the world trade they control, especially in this particular sector. So what this chart shows you is some of the previous geopolitical shocks and how much of an effect they have basically on global GDP. So it lists out the shocks and then it shows you what the pullback was on global GDP. Obviously, if you look towards the bottom, you've got the Taiwan war. That was a 10% shock to GDP. You've got the Gulf War only at a 1% shock. So geopolitical risks, you cannot paint with a broad brush and say any risk is a big risk. Of course, they're big risks and they come with big consequences, not only to the citizens of those countries, to the regions, to trade, and to global GDP, but some of them are much larger than others. So don't underestimate and don't extrapolate this maybe small reaction in the market that's happened with this recent Middle East tension and assume that that's the small reaction we would have to other tensions that could boil to the surface.
Taiwan blockade, Taiwan war, you know, obviously none of us are hoping for that, but that's out there without question. So thank you for walking me through that. Now, as I mentioned, Dan would be mad at me, so I'll try to play this straight. If it's Thursday, what happens on Thursday?
We're going to butter some bread.
It's John Butters, the senior earnings analyst at FactSet. By the way,
this is his moment to shine.
It's his moment to shine.
Yeah.
Dan and I are leaving Monday night after Fast Money, flying to Miami, not Miami Beach, Miami, for the FactSet conference. Uh-huh. Very excited.
Yeah.
Focus conference. First conference in person since pre-COVID. Look at that. That's me with the tie, and that's Dan.
Uh-huh.
Tuesday with it. Huh?
Without a tie.
Without a tie, Dan. Yeah. You know, he's younger than I mean, I get whatever.
Oh, I see.
But okay. I'm knotted up, as I will be on the plane
always.
Monday night. So we're going to be there Monday night, Tuesday, Wednesday. We'll leave Thursday. You're coming down as well.
I am not on the same plane.
No.
Although I do wish that I could see what I've heard is just you sitting in a seat, just staring straight
That's
ahead.
True.
Having checked your luggage for a one-night trip? Two-night trip, I guess.
No, I'll have luggage, which I will check.
Do you turn the TV on?
No. If it's on, it's on, but I'm not.
You don't touch it, though.
Nah, I'm not particularly interested in it.
Okay.
I try to freak out the people around me, which is always easy to do.
I'm sure that works.
But then,
yeah.
You know, but I'm also the air, what do they call them now, the people on the plane? There's a
flight attendants.
Thank you. Uh-huh. I think they enjoy people like, because I don't ask for anything. I don't bother them. If everybody on the plane was the same,
they'd
have nothing to do.
To like have a fit or something.
Well,
it's
that's
like this
me.
Guy that's quiet, and, you know, still waters run deep.
Maybe still waters
like
run deep. And they're like they're asking
guy.
For the air marshal.
He's
keep,
about to
keep
lose
an eye
it.
On that one. Anyhow, we're privy to his note. And today it talks about profit margins. So throw it up, Amanda, because this is actually pretty interesting. And what I glean from this is, you know, again, this goes back to 2019, I believe. And if you look at it, this is currently the second lowest profit margin since the fourth quarter of 2020. However, it reflects a quarter over quarter increase versus the fourth quarter of 2023. Okay, so I get all that part. Here's my question to you, because you do this a lot better than I do. As rates continue to move higher, almost by definition, one would think, especially if inflation is still a problem and you can't pass on, profit margins almost have to start deteriorating from here. Or am I just reading too much into this? Thoughts?
Well, of course, I think they have to start deteriorating largely because of what we've talked about already with the fact that I don't think companies can pass through costs anymore.
No,
I think that game has been played. Consumers are saying no more. We won't pay for it. They're already trading down. So I think you'll get this rejection from consumers to pay higher prices and you'll lose market share by doing that. So I think that's over. A lot of the fattening and widening of margins had occurred because companies were able to do that while at the same time controlling their costs. And for a period of time, wage pressure was not keeping up with the amount that they could pass through into revenues. So margins widened. That all made mathematical sense. I think it makes mathematical sense now that margins should contract. We've seen them contract. I mean, yes, it's growth over the previous quarter, but you still can see a pretty clean, steady downward move since that big peak. And I think that is what should happen. The big question is whether or not they will fall off or not. So margins are one of those things that as they move down, if they go down slowly and companies are managing their operating margin well, then they will continue to go down slowly until things get really tight and companies are down to sort of bare bones expenses. If they drop and fall off a cliff, that's when companies have to do, you know, the fire sale and start laying people off. That's
exactly
what you don't want to see.
That's
the magnitude and the speed.
That's exactly right. And that was going to be my point. It's fine as long as things, it's like, nobody move, everybody's going to be okay. Like the bank robber thing. Nobody make a move. Mm-hmm. Did you see The Rock, the movie, by any chance?
No. I don't really watch movies. So or I just watch the ones that I like over and over and over again, which, you know, like I could recite Dirty Dancing probably all the way through.
That is a problem. One night I asked Erin Burnett, who was hosting, again, Amanda's like, please stop, because this is during the Butters piece, but I'm sorry, you can cut this out. I asked Erin, middle of the show, like a complete non sequitur. She was asking me a question about Tyco, let's just say, okay, which was a company. And I said, what's your favorite movie? Out of nowhere. Because I figured I'd catch her.
Yeah.
She said, Contact with Jodie Foster.
Oh,
now,
wow.
I find myself rarely at a loss for words, but I was. I said to her, that's nobody's favorite. That's Jodie Foster. I mean, she hated that movie. Anyway, the point about The Rock is there's a scene when Sean Connery and his crew, they infiltrate The Rock, Alcatraz, and they're in like the shower. However, Ed Harris and his crew, they were alerted to them. They have the high ground, and Sean Connery and the guy from what's the movie? The Terminator. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Not the Terminator.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No, no. They were down below, and they're, no, you know, put your guns down. No, we're not. Everybody's going back and forth. Everybody's trying to be cool, but then a rock falls and it startles people, and everybody starts to shoot.
Oh.
And that's my point here. Uh-huh. Like right now, everybody's at this standoff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. However, if something makes a noise, that's when layoffs are going to happen. And that's the real concern. And that's been my concern, that as margins start to contract, which we're starting to see, they're going to be layoffs. Layoffs happen. It's going to happen in a very precipitous way. The unemployment rate is going to scare people, blah, 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 blah.
I think at this point, any unemployment rate above 4 is going to scare people because we're so used to where
that's
it
fair.
Is. And I think that's the case for a lot of these metrics. Any GDP print below 2 is going to scare people.
Which did
and
today.
It's still positive, but it's scaring people. Even if the Fed had been warning us of this, said that we need periods of lower growth or below trend growth in order to take care of inflation. And now here it's happening and people are like, wait. One handle's not okay. I think the same thing will happen with a lot of these metrics that we're used to. Jobs under 200,000 will scare people, right? And an unemployment rate above 4 would spook people. There are a lot of different things. Margins in the single digits would scare people. It's that we're so used to a certain level of strength.
Amanda's saying we got to wrap. Love that. She's mad at me. If you'd like John Butter's work, and what's not to like, watch this. That was like 3 seconds. Get it in your inbox. Why wouldn't you? I mean, what the hell are you waiting for? Because he is a man.
As guy can snap.
As fast like that.
Yep.
And then we showed you where we're going to be, but show it again because it is a pretty good picture. And Elizabeth will be there with us for a day. And that's really kind of you to come join us. This is going to be a big deal. We are excited for that. So I want to thank you as always. I love seeing you on HTR and all the other shows. Will you be in some like Octobox tomorrow morning?
No. For PCE? I haven't done that in a long time.
No? Uh-uh. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You've risen to a point where you should not be part of those.
No Octoboxes?
No.
Okay.
It's either me or, you know, put the other SDs.
All right. You know what? I don't need my agent anymore. I'll just have you be my agent. Dan is going to be so mad. He's wanted to be my agent for a long time.
I'd be much better. No, that's not necessarily true. Because Dan's good at those types of things.
Yeah.
But I get like the whole thing.
Okay.
Anyway. I've enjoyed this. Have you enjoyed it?
I
have as well. The Brewers are playing as we speak. You want
to
take a quick look at the score?
They were losing to the Pirates when we got on here. I don't know what's happening now, but I think they were down 3-1. They are now.
It's early.
Hold on. Oh, tied.
Tied at 3-3. There you go. See, that's we should do the show more often.
We should.
Thanks, everybody. We won't be back tomorrow. But as I mentioned, Monday, we'll be doing it from New York. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, probably in Florida. Thanks for joining.